This is .NET Cast with hosts Mark Baker and Nick Hemdahl.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.
And now introducing your host for .NET Cast, Mark Baker.
Welcome to .NET Cast. I'm your host, Mark Baker. Thanks for joining us again. With me tonight is my co-host, Nick Hemdahl. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. We're going to have another great show tonight on .NET. And don't forget, you can always find us on the web at www.ddj.com/podcast/.NET Cast/.
Welcome to .NET Cast. Today we're going to talk with Microsoft Product Manager Yehenia Pace of the Patterns and Practices Group and Ed Yezerski, Architect of the Mobile Smart Client Software Factory in Patterns and Practices, about developing smart clients for the mobile device platform, including the just-released mobile SCSF. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
So, Ed, let's get started with a discussion of the Mobile Smart Client Software Factory, also known as the Mobile SCSF. What's the block, and how can it help developers get started creating smart clients for the mobile device platform?
Well, the first thing I think it's important to understand is what is in a software factory. Software factory is a bit of a fanciful name, right? And some people like it and some people don't. But I like thinking of it as the toolkit of things you need to build an application of a certain type within a certain scenario. So the scenario we're tackling with this software factory is the one of building mobile clients. And we're looking at mobile clients that will typically be interacting or in a distributed way with web services, databases, or other systems in the back end, right? And have some pretty hefty user interaction. So we're looking at doing something that would help you do an ERP, CRM, or healthcare type of solution, not necessarily a wake-up clock alarm. So in these software factories, what we include is a bunch of things. We first have a set of documentation that explains how we see the overall architecture or one of these mobile applications. Everybody has their own architecture, but we think there's some repeated elements.
Right.
See after doing architecture reviews of a set of customers. So we try to describe these because everybody's solutions tend to apply to somebody else. So we, as part of patterns and practices, we look at these patterns that make up these architectures and we try to document them. But, you know, you've got to start coding the thing and there's pieces of code that get rewritten again and again. We package these up into application blocks. In the mobile client software factory, we have application blocks for a bunch of things, the application blocks are libraries that you can reuse. We provide the source code, but you can think of them as runtime frameworks that you deploy with your application, just like you would with other libraries.
Right.
We have one important block, which we call the composite UI application block. And what this is a container architecture for applications based on plugins. This allows you, for example, to deploy a standard shell to your devices for your business, and you know that in this shell you will have one way of doing logging and one way of doing authorization and so on. And then every business unit, every business logic developer, just focuses on building plugins into these shells that will then be loaded up as DLLs into the shell and displayed at the right time, and the user gets to use them. Now, the benefit of doing applications in this way is that it simplifies the life of operators because they have less stuff to deal with in terms of deployment and manageability, and it also helps the life of the business logic developers because they just get to focus on the piece that they care about, you know, accessing the data and the web services they care about, and not reinventing a full EXE every time.
Right.
And also, the CAP helps with making sure that these plugins have a way of integrating and interoperating with each other. So we have a way of doing pub-sub events between plugins. We have a way for the different pieces of logic to share state in case they want to share some customer model information, and also to share a shell so that the shell can say, hey, here's places where you can extend me in cool ways, and the different plugins can do things onto this shell according to what they need to do. And this composite UI block is similar to the one that you find on the desktop, which also enables this plugin-based application architecture. But the one for mobile is optimized in terms of performance and in terms of the UI things it provides for the mobile device.
So did you guys actually port the desktop-based CAB to the mobile platform, or did you have to actually rewrite it?
We ported it, we spun it, we tweaked it. So we started by porting the unit test.
Right.
And then we actually started porting the chunks of code that make sense, but we did a lot of trimming around features that were not supported on the Compact framework. And then we also did a lot of new development to do performance improvements. Because, for example, the cab relies a lot on reflection, a lot of runtime discovery of things to make these plugins talk to each other. So we built utilities that make sure that you write the code in the same way whether you're on the desktop or the mobile cab, but when you're on the, running in mobile, you actually do not get scanned for all these attributes and so on at runtime, therefore improving performance.
Ah.
So we started with a port of the tests, we ported the chunks of code that made sense, and we did new development.
So, I mean, that's a big part of cab right now, where you actually scan the application and the application suite on the supporting assemblies looking for cab attributes and then, you know, using that information to figure out what's what. So you guys aren't doing that with the mobile version of this.
Right. You still write your code using the attributes, but we provide a utility that's called CabGen, another one that's called OBGen, that will create satellite assemblies around your assembly. And at runtime, we go like, do we have one of these pre-generated assemblies? And if we find it, we will actually use it, and it will save us all the runtime discovery and reflection work.
Holy
cow.
If we don't find it,
then we just do the runtime discovery, which is slow, but it will work. And this helps both with the development while you're, you know, writing code and trying it out and debugging often, and also at deployment where you just want things to be fast. So
wow.
It's kind of like, it's not a pre-compiler down to the native code level. We still generate IL, but it pre-interprets all the metadata that is included in a cab module. And we improved performance like 4x for typical dependency injection scenarios, just to give you an idea.
So is that satellite assembly that you're creating, is that generated whenever the DLL, like the timestamp changes, the version changes, or does the developer actually have to run a tool to say, update my assembly before I deploy it?
Well, the way I would do it is that we provide you the utility. We recommend that you register it as a post-build event.
Right.
But you would typically also include it as part of your continuous integration server and so on.
Gotcha. Is there any chance that that might get actually ported back to the desktop?
We're working on that right now. The thing is that Object Builder, you know, as a generic factory builder and dependency injection framework, is being used across all the runtime TMT deliverables.
Right.
If we want to make sure it works, we have all the unit tests, but we just shipped the mobile client software factory, so we haven't had the chance to actually do the work yet.
You were saying earlier that you guys are focused on optimizing the cab toolkit for the mobile device platform. What were some of the challenges you guys had in actually getting that desktop version of that piece of software to work on a mobile platform with memory limitations and other things?
Well, that's the first thing. First of all, it was about understanding what were the limitations and the non-functional requirements that were kind of like inflicted upon us. There's some of them that are obvious, like performance, heap size, stack depth, and things like that you would expect of an engineer, right?
Right.
But there were others that were a little bit more insidious, especially for people new to the mobile platform. One of them, for example, is battery lifetime. The way you do background threads may or may not keep the CPU awake, and that will have a direct impact on the number of hours you can use the device without recharging. So it was very clear up front that we had to review with, you know, experts in the community and with experts in Microsoft what were the non-functional requirements that we had. And also we had to learn a couple of new techniques to test these things. For example, profiling on the device for performance is different than profiling on the desktop because of timers and whatnot. So that was, I think, the major thing. But in terms of, that was for our perspective of porting a framework, right, a piece of infrastructure code. One of the important things that we see a lot in customers when they're trying to port applications going from between, you know, desktop to mobile development is that actually a lot of the work that needs to happen to do it right. It's not just at the engineering level, but it's also in the user interface design. And this is something that we see, that I learned was a make or break for the enterprises trying to deploy mobile applications. The way you design your user interface will be a direct impact on the success of the application. For example, if you design your application to assume it's offline on the desktop and then you port it to a mobile device where you have to be occasionally connected, and the application almost tries to simulate that it's connected to the user, it might be setting the wrong expectation. And then you see architects and developers kind of like going, you know, upside down, trying to make sure that the UI pretends that data that wasn't submitted yet looks like it's submitted and things like that. In the end, it really complicates the architecture because of a not well-designed UI. So we saw that, for example, with our Dynamics partners in Denmark, that they had a lot of effort in UI design, and we saw how a good user interface design had direct impact on the type of architectural things they had to build in the code of the application to, you know, manage caches and offline state and conflicts and whatnot. So, you know, we had to look at a lot of the low-level things, but as application developers, I would say, look at your UI, look at your security, look at how you simplify your business logic, but don't oversimplify it. You don't need to throw away all the patterns you used to for developing, you know, large applications, because that will not have an impact on the performance or the security of your app. Right. You, using Model View Controller, Model View Presenter will help you do model development, and that little extra class and little extra method will not be the make or break for the app.
You were saying earlier that the Object Builder is being used across patterns and practices. Toolkits, software offerings. So how hard is it going to be for, how easy is it going to be for someone who's experienced with, or a significant exposure to the desktop version of SCSF, actually get up and going on the mobile version of it?
The experience is extremely similar, actually, and that was driven a lot by customer demand. We want somebody to say, I want to build a baseline of this type of application, mobile or smart client. They show up with a solution structure, they get some blocks. In the mobile device, you also get blocks around connectivity detection and offline web services and replication that are similar to the ones on the desktop, but you know, on the desktop, they're not as important. So usually the experience is the same. The way you structure your business logic is the same. We recommend using the same patterns, you know, Model View Presenters, use of controllers, service agents for interacting with outside services. It's just that, for example, when in the mobile client software factory, you say, I want to create a disconnected service agent, we will generate one type of code that relies on the device way of doing web services and connectivity detection. And when you're doing it on the desktop, you'll get a different set of code generated based on the capabilities of the full framework. But the intent is the same, and you have similar ways of expressing intent in both toolkits. So we actually hope that that might kind of accelerate a little bit of people trying out mobile applications.
Are you saying actually people trying to develop applications on both desktop and mobile, they're actually using SCSF to do both? Or they're moving back and forth between the two different platforms, but they're using the same technology? As far as SCSF?
I work with customers that are starting to do that. I mean, we just shipped the Mobile Client Software Factory.
Right.
They already have big implementations of applications using the Smart Client Software Factory and the CAB. And what they're looking at is what are the pieces of my business logic that are portable to the device? And since we did a lot of that hard work to keep similarity across both platforms, you know, it's easier for them to do that. Of course, the UI has to be redesigned. The UI workflow has to be redesigned because of what I mentioned earlier. But, you know, the whole notion that at the low level in the code, you don't have a drastically different code set is a great advantage. Right.
Yeah, basically, architectures are consistent between the two different platforms. It's just
exactly.
the GUI is really different.
How does the mobile SCSF help me with developing the different screen resolutions and orientations on the mobile side?
Hey, I'm glad you asked. I think that's actually one of the killer features in the Mobile Client Software Factory is that we have a control that we call the orientation aware control. So this is the thing that the industry is dealing with right now. There is a plethora of devices that are coming out with different screen sizes, resolution, orientation. And as a developer, you can try to have a UI that adapts to each and every one of them, right? Especially
right.
if you're an ISV. But this is very hard, and you end up doing a one-size-fits-all, which is very suboptimal. For example, you would design differently a UI that is on a horizontal, large VGA screen than you would for a small square trio, right?
Right.
So this orientation aware control lets you do, it lets you actually redesign the UI as appropriate for every orientation that you really care about. And what I mean redesign, I mean really redesign. It's not just stretch and dock and, you know, keep things more or less in the same place with proportional sizing. What I'm talking about is hide things, show things, change icons, hide labels, put things in different spots, show and hide columns in list views. Another thing that are really a redesign of the interface so that you have a better user experience for every device and orientation.
Right, so I can essentially just target any device then pretty much.
Right, and the interesting thing is also we did this in a way that it doesn't impact the application at runtime.
Well, that's all for this episode of .NET Cast. Send us an email at .netcast@sunburstsoftware.com and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody. The opinions expressed on .netcast are solely those of the participants and not necessarily those of its sponsors or CMP Media, its partners or employees. .netcast is a CMP DevNet podcast and is produced by Sunburst Software at sunburstsoftware.com. Additional production support has been provided by Digital Context at digitalcontext.com. CMP DevNet is solely responsible for the content of .netcast.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.